Well, we've got one more person behind the secret door. We'll open up that door in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, so let's open up our third door, see who this might be. Come on in. How are you?
Hello, Georgie. You know, we all float down here.
Oh, boy, this is going to be another tough one. This is not easy. How's your day going?
It's night, Georgie, and it's fine.
It's night, and it's fine. And you call me Georgie, which means you might know me well. I think. Have you been on the program often?
Yes, I have.
Part of the way I guess who you are is I got to hear you talk more. So you've been on the program before. What are your favorite subjects?
Oh, I guess you would say anything pop culture.
Pop culture. Do you deal with the supernatural?
Sometimes.
Do you deal with music?
Most of the time.
Are you R. Gary Patterson?
Yes, I am.
Very good, Gary. Very good.
I was about to say, remember St. Louis.
That's right. That would have been a giveaway. And you're on this Saturday with Richard Serrett, right? Or next week. I think you're on Sunday, right?
I think
Sunday
so.
Night. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, Ian Anderson's going to be on the first hour. So when you talk about Jethro Tull, that's going to be great too. So it's going to be a fun time.
The only way I guessed you is when I stumbled into the music thing, and we don't have a lot of musical experts on this program.
Uh-huh.
You can count them on two fingers, and you may be both those fingers. So that's how I got you.
Well, that's nice to know because I enjoy doing it.
So I had a story earlier today. It's good to hear you again, Gary. But I had a story that the Rolling Stones are doing another album, first time since 2005.
It is. It's a blues album.
Yeah.
And I hear Eric Clapton's supposed to play on it as well.
He was recording, apparently, in the studio next door and came over and played a little bit with them.
How good is that?
Yeah.
You know that they actually offered Eric Clapton a chance to be a Rolling Stone.
I didn't know that.
They did. And, of course, he turned it down, but it'll be kind of nice to see him with them. If he goes on tour with them, it'd be great. But, you know, to hear him play with the Stones, that's going to be an opportunity to hear some great playing.
Gary, how did you have fun with the St. Louis event?
Oh, had a great time. Always have fun hanging with you guys. And, you know, we just had a great time. I always told everybody the show in St. Louis was rock and roll and UFOs.
And that's what it was.
It was a blast.
So yeah. Did I surprise you with my singing?
Well, you know, George, I've heard you before.
I know. You've heard every great singer and performer in the history of music. You've heard them all. So where would you put me on that list?
Well, you would be on the list. There's no doubt about that. I know.
Well, everybody gets on the list if they sing, right?
Yeah, but let me tell you this. You know, you have a passion for Frank Sinatra.
And Elvis.
And Elvis, and Bobby Darin.
Yes.
And, you know, when you have a passion to be able to do that kind of music and sing that sort of style, it's a little different than anything else. And I think the passion does it. And I know that your crowd really enjoys it.
It was fun. I have fun doing it.
Yeah, it's always fun. Hopefully
you know,
we can
I'm not great. I can't make a career doing it by any means. You know, don't give up your night job for that. but it's just fun.
I think it's fun. I think you do a very good job.
You know how I started doing all this? When I was a kid, my mother always had, and she still has them, these records, the 33s, the 78s.
Oh, yeah.
And in the old days, Gary, your stereo was a piece of furniture. You know, now it's just a nice high-tech piece of equipment you put up on top of a cupboard or cabinet or someplace. But in those days, it was a piece of furniture. And she would let me play these records. And I would play all. She had everything. I mean, they got to be worth a fortune. I got to go check them out.
You do.
But I would play them all, old songs from way gone back. And I was a kid. I was 9 years old, and I was singing those songs. And I had a great time, and that's how I continue to do that. But she does have all those old records. They might be worth something, huh?
You never know. I tell you what, a lot of people throw out a fortune when they throw out their albums and CDs. And well, not as much CDs. I think vinyl's making a much-needed comeback. But, I mean, I've got thousands of records, and I look at them and I play them because, you know, I still have a turntable because I love the way they sound, and I buy new vinyl, and I know that there's some albums that are incredible. I was at a show in Philadelphia doing a Beatles convention, and one guy had the White Album, and it was like A000001. It was the very first one made.
Yeah,
and
that's,
you know,
exciting.
The thing was like $10,000. And I have a butchered cover that the Beatles, one of the most famous Beatle albums, and, you know, of course, mine is peeled. And if you know anything about the history of Beatle albums, don't peel it. It's worth more money. But I felt like, well, I need to peel it so people know I got it.
Well, you're gonna love this story.
Okay.
I have accumulated reward points with my cell phone company.
Uh-huh.
Since the beginning of time. I never even knew I had them. Every bill I've paid every month for 20 years, I don't know how long cell phones have been around. I've had the same carrier. I have paid it, so I've accumulated these reward points. Well, one day it said, you know, auction, bid with your reward points. And I went, what do I have? So I clicked it. I'm online, and I've got 1.5 million reward points. That's worth a fortune.
Wow.
A fortune. And so it said, conducting auction right now. And you could buy things at auction if you had enough points, and then you see what happens. And this auction was 4 weeks long. And I went on and looked at it, and do you know what they had up there?
No, what did they have?
A Prince signed guitar.
My goodness.
Amazing. And this is after he died.
Right, yeah.
And so I'm saying, wow. And I'm watching this thing, and it's up to like 80,000 points. And I'm looking at mine, and I've got 1.5 million points, and I'm going, this is something. But
it is.
But you bid, and then, you know, you see what happens. And so I bid 85,000. And so I was the top bidder. And then I came back an hour later, and it was already up to like 120. So I decided, look, this thing is 4 weeks long. I'm going to wait until the last half hour, 4 weeks from now, and I'm going to come back.
Right.
And I did. And now it's up to 800,000 points. And I've got enough points. I've got enough points. So being a old buyer of horses at auction, racehorses, you want to be one of the last guys in. You don't want to get involved in a tug of war. Keep bidding in the beginning. That's really not smart. You want to be one of the last guys and hit him and win, and that's it. So I'm watching this thing, and now there's 10 minutes to go. It's 750,000. 10 minutes left, and I'm saying it's time to start bidding. I bid 800,000 points. I'm the top bidder. 9 minutes to go. I'm going to get this Prince guitar. Somebody bids 850. Now I'm ready to bid. I've got enough points.
Sure.
So I'm going to wait a couple more minutes. It's down to 5 minutes to go. I'm watching this clock, right, on the website. I make my bid. I can't get in. You apparently are locked out for I don't know how much time. I don't know how long they lock you out before you can rebid again. And I'm now freaking out. I'm panicking, and I'm watching this thing. I'm not the top bidder, And I'm watching the clock, and it's down to 4 minutes. I bid. I can't get in. It's down to 3 minutes. I bid. I can't get in. It's down to a minute. I bid. I can't get in. It's down to 30 seconds. I get in at 850,000 points. And, you know, the guy who was bidding against me, he's now locked out. And he can't get in, and I win. I got the guitar.
You did?
Yep.
Well, that is fantastic. I was ready for a very sad story.
They said it was worth $9,000. I got it for free with my points. What do I do with it now?
I think you hold on to it because...
It came with an authentication, you know, that was his, and he signed it and everything else.
Well, let me explain. Jimi Hendrix, when his last Stratocaster went on auction, his guitar, would you like to guess how much it sold for?
Oh, my God. I couldn't even guess.
$1 million.
No way.
Way. And the funny thing is, if everybody thinks they got a Hendrix Strat, there is a list of serial numbers from Manny's Guitars in New York where Hendrix bought all his Strats, and you have to verify the serial number. But the last one went for $1 million, and on Pawn Stars, some guy was offered, I think, $500,000 for one.
Whoa!
And he turned it down. So what I'm saying, George, is they're telling you it's worth $7,000 now. It's going to be worth much more. And if you were to sell it for $10,000, you'd be happy until you saw how much it would go for.
Or exactly. 5-10 years from now could be a fortune.
It could be. I mean, let's face it, it's a limited edition.
And if it doesn't sell, you still have a neat little memento,
artifact. Yeah. All your friends can come over and say, oh, let me show you my Prince guitar. How many people can do that?
Not a lot.
That's right.
Not a lot. And I still have 500,000 points left. I can bid on something else.
Yes, you got 500,000. That's fabulous.
But I
got
to tell you, I was
to your carrier.
I was panicking when I got locked out because I didn't know when they would unlock you. I lucked out at 30 seconds to go. I really feel sorry for the guy who got locked out right after me.
But not that sorry, because you actually bid at the exact time at 30 seconds.
Yep. It was impossible for him to get back in. He couldn't. He must have been going crazy, freaking out. I'm sure he had enough points to come back.
You might want to sell it to him. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Should I sell it to you, Gary? Were you the guy?
Always an opportunity. Let me tell you what. I love memorabilia. And, you know, I've got a lot of great autographs that are authenticated. You know, I've got this one gold disc that was signed by all four of the Beatles, and it's in a wall hanging.
Well, that's a classic.
And it's, you know, I love it.
Well, they loved you in St. Louis because when we did the meet and greet afterwards, they were just all over you.
Well, I tell you, I love doing these. I love meeting people, you know, and what better time than hanging out with you and Tommy D.
Tom was telling me just a few days ago, he said, you know, George, there's no reason why we can't have people like Gary at almost every event because they're in different cities. And if we go to the same city, well, we'll have somebody else. But, you know, if we go to Austin, Texas and Las Vegas, Nevada and these other places, we can do that. And he's right.
And it's great. And let me just say that I'm going to be in Toronto next Saturday.
Aha! Uh-huh.
So, and you know, we went to Toronto. You were good enough to bring me up there. And there were a lot of great people. And I know that the Coast to Coast is carried in Toronto.
Yes, it is. It's huge. Number one up there.
It is, as it should be. But I'm going to be at the J.R.R. McLeod Auditorium on the 15th, and the doors open at 4, and we'll go till the 8th. And
what are you going to do, music?
It's going to be all interesting stories. It's going to even go back to the 50s and probably some of the great conspiracy theories about our government and rock and roll. So we're going to start with that. But Peggy Sue's going to be there on Skype, and I've got Leo Lyons, who was the bass player in 10 Years After, who was at Woodstock, and he's got some great stories. And Bill Harry, who's been on Coast to Coast with us, Bill was John Lennon's best friend and the founder of Mercy Beat magazine. So if you love rock and roll, come up and see me in Toronto and hang out. We have a great time. And hopefully me and George and the guest of Stars of Thousands will be doing some George Norrie and Friends, because that is an incredible show.
That would be great.
You need to come out.
You know, we've talked about the 27 Club. So many artists who have died at the age of 27, and it just happened again several months ago. Anton Yelchin from Star Trek. He dies when his car comes rolling down the driveway and pins him against his brick gate. Dies at the age of 27 years old. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. When I heard that age, I freaked out.
Yeah, you thought of me automatically, didn't
you? I did. I did. What is it about that age?
I don't know. You remember one time we did the show, I was on with you, and we had Glynis McCants on.
Yep.
And Glynis was talking about 27. And also did a thing with E called Doom to Die 13 Curses, and Glynis was on it. But, you know, it has to do, everything I've found out is that if you add 2 plus 7, you get 9. And, you know, in our mother's womb, it's 9 months before we're born. Number 9 numerologically is a great number of spiritual power. A lot of people leave at that age because they're finished, numerologists tell us. And, you know, I don't know how much of that's true, but every time a rock star dies, it makes me think, I hope they're not 27. I remember driving to Florida a few years ago, and my cell phone was just ringing like mad because Amy Winehouse had died, and she was 27. And they all wanted to know, what's this about, you know, the 27 Club, the curse of 27? So, you know, sometimes I just sit there and I think, man, don't let them be 27. And I remember reading a BMI magazine, songwriter magazine, and they had an interview with John Mayer. And they asked John Mayer, they said, what do you think your greatest accomplishment has been since you've been playing and recording? He said, well, I made it past 27.
Ah,
so
it's important to do that. Indeed. Hey, we lost you, Gary, but we'll call you right back. Let's get you right back on. You're not going to believe this. 27 minutes after the hour, he goes dead on the phone. That is weird, folks. I mean, exactly 1:27 out here in LA, 27 minutes after the hour, talking about the 27 Club and people who had died. His phone line dies and he's gone. Wow. Keep drying them back, Gina. See what you can get. And then we're going to take calls with Gary when we get him back at the last half. That is truly one of the strangest things I've ever seen. Wait till we get him back, and I tell him this, because he's not going to be aware of the time that that he did. So, Gary, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Your phone went dead at 27 minutes after the hour.
You're kidding.
Right. At 27:00, you clicked right off.
And here we are talking about a magical number, and it knocked it out right after I did the thing about John Mayer. I'm glad I'm past 27.
Isn't that weird?
It's extremely weird.
It really is. So back to Toronto for a second. You're also a consultant on a Buddy Holly documentary, right?
Yes, I am. And
how did I know that?
I don't know. I think what it is you just have this psychic ability tonight. You know, 27.
I'm on.
Out, and now you know this. You're on it, man. I was called and asked about it, and I said, well, I'll do it if you do the truth, if you tell the whole story and do the truth. And they assured me they would. And the company's already been in Lubbock, Texas, and they've interviewed Buddy Holly's two brothers.
Oh, that's neat. What a great artist he was.
Oh, yeah. You know, and this year he'd be 80 years old.
Died in that plane crash, right?
He did, with Richie Valens and the Big Bopper.
We're going to come back and
only 17.
We're going to come back and take phone calls with our Gary Patterson next on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Brandon Callahan joins me. We are going to be talking about strange things in North America. Make sure you're part of the show. And then, of course, it's Friday night into Saturday morning open lines. And welcome back to Coast. We're going to take your calls for this last half hour with our Gary Patterson as we talk music. Yeah, you were right. You're talking about Buddy Holly, and that he did not want to fly on that plane that fateful night, did he?
Well, actually, he did. He was wanting to sleep in a bed, and he wanted to make sure he had his clothes laundered because the school buses they were on was like 45 below zero. And they were lighting paper in the aisles, but then they would have to open the windows and let the smoke out. Now, the story is Richie Valens was terrified of flying because he'd gone to his grandfather's funeral, and at the junior high he went to, he used to take his guitar and sit outside and play under a tree. And while he was at his grandfather's funeral, two planes just collided in the air, and as the wreckage fell down, it killed Richie's best friend. So he had this terrible fear of flying, and whatever got him on that plane, I don't know. But he did flip the coin with Tommy Allsup, and he took the last seat, and he was killed at 17.
Sad story. They all went down. The Big Bopper?
Big Bopper with him. Roger Peterson, the pilot. Now, I got to tell you this real quickly. I got a phone call. I guess it was a year ago. And the lady who called me was Jerry Dwyer's wife. You know who Jerry Dwyer mm-hmm. is. Because, and she talked to me about doing a book on their version of the story. And, of course, you've heard the story about there may have been a bullet hole in the back of the pilot's seat.
Right.
And
that went off accidentally, right?
Yeah. Because Buddy carried a gun. He carried it in his briefcase. And when they found, when they moved the wreckage in the spring, the gun was found under the plane it had been fired. So everybody thought, oh my gosh, you know, the gun had gone off, it killed the pilot, that's why it crashed so fast. But the farmer who owned the land claimed, and he said, okay, I fired the gun to see if it worked. But she called me, and I asked her a very good question, George. I said, do you have the plane? And it got real quiet. And I said, do you have the plane? And she said, we have some of it. The plane hasn't been seen since 1959.
That's a good analogy. Where did it go? They took it.
Well, you know, it was sad because when the plane crashed, there was a rumor that Jerry Dwyer was going to take the plane and cut it up and make it into keychains and sell them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They would sell.
Ghoulish.
It is ghoulish, but they would sell.
Oh, my gosh, yes, they would. And then the story goes that a ditch was dug, and the plane was buried in a ditch. But wherever it is, she seems to know where it's at, and one of the items she told me that they had was a steering wheel. Now, that might be a good radio show sometime.
Yeah, it might. Can you can work that out for us?
I always work it out for you.
You do. If people knew how much we put you to work. Gary, go get this person. Go get this person.
Go get the doors. No, I tell you what. Now, the one thing is that it would be good to get Donald Ludwig back again, who was Richie Valens' girlfriend, and maybe Peggy Sue.
And he did the song O'Donna about her.
That's
right.
That was for her. And she doesn't like to talk about this, but since she's not on the air with us, I'll tell you. The night that Richie Valens left to go on the Winter Dance Party tour, there was a party at his house, and she wasn't allowed to go because her father did not want her dating Richie. But when she was told the day at school that the plane had went down and Richie Valens was killed, when she got home, within a day or so, her father took her to a recording studio and made her record a song called Lost Without You.
Huh.
From Donna to Richie.
Who did the song? Who wrote the song?
Well, the song was written. It was like writing three stars. I mean, a lot of people will write lyrics, put a song together, and then they rush it out. So her father is the one who had the song done. And she doesn't like to talk about it, but when I talked to her about it, she said, well, I finally forgiven my father. Because that was bad. But I will tell you this. She loves Richie Valens as much today
as she
did when she was in high school.
Wow.
So you talk about great stories.
Did she get married or anything like that over the time?
She did get married. And she's divorced now. She lives in California. But, you know, I got to know her and got to talk to her. And when you talk to people like Peggy Sue and you talk to people like Donald Ludwig, you know, you hear this passion, passion and love.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, great love story. But that would be a good show. And maybe it'd be good to have something close to February 3rd. And maybe I can get Tommy Allsup to come on and talk about flipping the coin with Richard.
Oh, my gosh. Now, would she be upset if we played the O'Donna Richie Valens song leading into it?
No.
She would not.
You know, we had her on for a while. On the 50th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And we had the Big Bopper Jr.
Right.
And we talked about the autopsy,
right,
if you remember. And she told me that when she heard O'Donna, that she cried. She always cries when she hears,
yeah,
it, she said. And when we did Peggy Sue, instead of playing Peggy Sue, we played Peggy Sue Got Married.
Mm-hmm.
The second song Buddy written for. But, you know, it would be good maybe around February. And maybe what we ought to do is do a little television thing and see if I can get us into videotape some of that playing.
Good, good. Okay, that sounds good. Let us go to the phones.
Have fun, George.
You
always
ready?
Have fun.
Here they
I'm
go.
I'm ready. Let's talk.
Ben in Manchester, New Hampshire. You're on with us, Ben. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, George, and good morning to your guests.
Hi there.
Question, whatever happened if Bob Dylan still owns it to that electric guitar when he went on stage for a pop festival? He was booed off stage, famous. It seems to me it might have been something he kept because of him being a true artist. He'd say, well, I'm keeping this. They may not like it. I'm not.
You're talking about the folk festival he played.
It was, I can't remember what it was. Was it, did he keep it or did it go out?
You know, I don't know. But I do know that he was booed continuously because he brought an electric guitar and not his acoustic because it was a folk festival.
Right.
But
right.
You do know that that's why he wrote Positively 4th Street,
mm-hmm,
was because of the reaction that the crowd gave him. You have a lot of nerve to say You Are My Friend, the whole folk thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, I loved hearing Bob Dylan as a bumper music because, you know, I know that Bob Dylan doesn't like to think he's a voice of a generation, but I think he did probably more to pass the Civil Rights Act in 1964, and along with a lot of singers from Motown and Stax, but Blowing in the Wind and all the others, it touched the consciousness, and it created, on the day that Martin Luther King did the March on Washington, when the choir sang and Peter, Paul, and Mary did Blowing in the Wind, Sam Cooke was in the crowd, and he said, you know, I should have written a song like that. This is my struggle. So he goes home, and he writes A Change Is Going to Come. Later that day, in the Washington, when they did the Lincoln Memorial, the choir was again there, and Bob Dylan, Joan Baez, they were all singing it. And in the crowd was Curtis Mayfield. And he heard the song. He said, you know, I should have written this song. So he goes home, and he writes People Get Ready about a heaven-bound train that's got room for everybody. And all of those songs, those two songs, and the Civil Rights Movement was so influenced by one guy who sat down and asked the right questions to a generation after watching the marches in the South.
That's right.
The water hoses and the snapping jaws of the German shepherds. And that's why Bob Dylan is such a national treasure.
I had Pat Boone on last year, and we were talking about Andy Williams, and he was offered, Pat was offered the song Moon River, and he said, nah, I don't like it. Give it to the Andy Williams guy.
And Andy was forever grateful.
That became his song. Let's go to Jake, truck driving in Pennsylvania on the wild card line. Jake, go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Noria, how are you doing today?
Good, Jake. Good to have you with us.
Well, my grandfather used to listen to Art Bell, and I used to listen to you when I was a young teenager, so it's an honor to be on.
Oh, great. We kept it in the family.
Yeah, exactly. My main question for Mr. Allen was, I know there's a lot of conspiracy surrounding Elvis Presley's death, and I'm a huge Elvis fan. My mother raised me on him. Was he truly, because I know there's rumors going around that either he survived or that he was actually murdered, and I was wondering if there was any new information on that.
Well, you would know, Gary.
Well, you know, the greatest rumor on Elvis was that he faked his death. We've gone through this. I mean, I was actually flown out to California to be part of a movie where they were analyzing the clues. And, you know, I will tell you.
Are they compelling clues?
Well, you know, a lot of times when people start urban legends, they were talking about, well, you know, Elvis died the same age of his mother. Well, that's not true. You know, he didn't die the same age as his mother. But if
he was 42, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think his mother was, what, 44?
Something like that.
She was a little older. But, you know, and the idea that, you know, they had DNA and all of this from this, and it was gone through. But let's talk conspiracy. In the 1950s, when the CIA was ready to do the Bay of Pigs invasion, how popular was this new brand of music, rock and roll, and how would it affect American inactivity, you know, un-American activities? Because if you remember, it was a period of intense segregation. When the greatest generation came back from making the world safe for democracy, and they came back and they started their families, they really didn't care who sat on the back of the bus. But their children did.
Yeah.
So when you had black music being played with white radio stations, white artists, especially in the South, and you had Elvis Presley when he came out, you know, take a look at the day the music died. We talked about it just a minute ago, George. And, you know, think of it as the year the music died. Because
mother was 46, by the way.
Yeah. 46. You know, that we found out. I knew he died before his mom. Now, the one thing that made it interesting is you had the plane crash that killed Buddy Holly, Ritchie Valens, and the Big Bopper.
Now, he died after his mom, but he was...
Oh, I'm sorry. He outlived her.
But he was younger than her.
Right.
When he died.
But the
she died in 58.
Okay. And it was a devastating thing for Elvis. But, you know, if you take a look at the plane crash that took Ritchie, Buddy, and the Big Bopper, the payola scandals of Alan Freed, Chuck Berry was in prison, Little Richard had given up rock and roll to become a minister, Jerry Lee Lewis married his 13-year-old cousin, Elvis was in the army, and rock and roll was tame. And, you know, you take a look at this. There are some people who say that there were some strange things that happened with that plane. It shouldn't have crashed within seconds of takeoff. So there's conspiracy theories everywhere. The thing with Elvis is that when he had passed away, you know, he had almost become a character of himself. He made fun of himself a lot of times. Like, I only know three chords on the guitar. Well, Elvis never, well, he should have always realized how important he was because, you know, he was the guy who set it all up. When Buddy Holly watched Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly decided to be a rock star, not a country star.
That's right.
Because he was actually playing country music until they saw the reaction that Elvis got. So isn't it kind of odd that within 3 years, ending in 1959, that all these great figures of rock and roll were gone?
Yep. The guy that was started it, Chuck Berry, still around.
He's still around. And he's in St. Louis, too.
Yep, sure is. I met him once.
Oh, see, that's fabulous. Chuck Berry, a legend. Little Richard is still around.
Yep.
He's a legend.
Elvis today would be 81 years old.
It's hard to believe it.
Oh, my God. Sinatra, what, over 100?
Yes.
That's really strange.
I know they had a celebration on his 100th birthday.
Yep. Let's go to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Ed's with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ed, go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I appreciate it. I'll be real brief because I know we're limited on time. I wonder if you guys heard the story Waylon Jennings had told it many, many, many years ago on the Johnny Carson show, when Carson still had it. He said he was going on that tour with, you know, the Bopper and Valens and Buddy Holly, and they were supposed to take a bus, but Big Bopper was supposed to be on the bus. Waylon Jennings was supposed to be on the plane, and Big Bopper talked Richards, whatever his name was, Mike, oh, you know, Big Bopper, talked Waylon Jennings into giving him his seat on the plane so he wouldn't have to ride on the bus. And Waylon Jennings took the bus, and, you know, the rest is history. I wonder if you're familiar with that story.
You know that story, Gary.
I know that story. And the way the Big Bopper did it, he had the flu. He was sick. And he convinced Waylon Jennings to let him have his seat so that he could get in early enough to see a doctor
and rest up,
get a shot. Now, he also had a brand new sleeping bag that his wife bought him. And he told Waylon he could have the sleeping bag and he'd sleep on the bus. And Waylon enjoyed hanging out with the guys. So he asked Buddy, he says, listen, I'm going to let the big bopper have my seat. And then Buddy looks at him and he says, yeah, well, I hope your old bus breaks down and you freeze your butt off. And then Waylon Jennings looked at him and says, yeah, and I hope your old plane crashes.
Yeah. Oh, and he had to live with that, didn't he?
He did. Terrible.
Oh. Joe in the Bronx. Go ahead, Joseph. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Gary. I have a friend named David Brigati. He was formerly of Joey D and the Starlighters. Well, he's explained that Jimi Hendrix was a band member of Joey D and the Starlighters for 4.5 months. Also, you know Eddie Brigati, David's brother, was with the Rascals.
He was, yes.
What do you know about Hendrix's early days?
Well, I'll tell you, he also played with Little Richard, and Little Richard fired him because Jimmy was a little flamboyant, the way he dressed and the way he played his guitar, and Little Richard said, there can only be one star, and I'm the star, and he was actually Little Richard's valet, too, and he had played with Curtis Knight and recorded an album called Got That Feeling. And he would sit in and played with Joey D. There's so many bands that he would sit in because he was a freelance guitar player. And when he was discovered at the Cafe Wa by Charles Chandler or Chaz Chandler and brought back to England, the way Chandler got Hendrix to go to England was he said, I'll introduce you to Eric Clapton. And that's why he went to England. And you had all the stories about the experience. I know that he actually had asked Leo Lyons from 10 Years After to be the bass player. And then when Noel Redding came in for an audition with the Animals, he loved the way his hair. He had this great natural-looking afro, so I hired him there. Now, I know a person that I talked to a few weeks ago who owns 50 unreleased Jimi Hendrix numbers with Curtis Mayfield. They've never been released anywhere else. So there may be some news coming up on that pretty soon. So that's just one of the sidemen that Hendrix played with.
What a tragedy when he died, Gary.
Very much. And now I've got an interview with Tabby Wright, who says that Jimi Hendrix was murdered and says how he did it, how they did it, not him.
I thought he suffocated in his own, vomit and everything else.
Well, here's the thing, George. This has always got me.
I got 20 seconds left. Go ahead.
I want to do it in 20. So here's what happened. When they brought him to the hospital, wine was oozing from his mouth. He had a bottle of wine in his hair, yet his toxicology level didn't have enough alcohol to be a beer. And everything that we were told about the ambulance drivers coming, Monica Damon riding with him, that's not true. Nobody had ever interviewed the ambulance drivers. No one had ever interviewed the doctor. And when the ambulance got there, Jimi Hendrix was dead, alone in the apartment.
Man, keep at it, Gary. Great information. Thank you so much. I'm 2-for-1 and behind the secret door. Yay. For Dan Galante, Gina Salvati, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.